Today's episode of Locked On Suns is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout to get 20% off your next order.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Regular season is here, but we still have season preview content to get to, and that is just what we are going to do here on Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow our show on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On PHX Suns. You can follow me on Twitter and the Locker Room app, where I love to do recap shows for you guys, at Brendan Kleen 14. Here we are. Regular season week, tip-off week, whatever you want to call it, the NBA season is here. Tuesday night, two games on TNT, and then Wednesday, the Suns and the Mavericks are the nightcap of the real opening night, the full opening night for the 2020-21 NBA season. Feels like we have been waiting for this moment for so long, but really it's only been about a month since I took the show over. I am loving the interaction with you guys. Love having this platform to talk with Suns fans again. And the season is here. That's what we do this for. So let's get underway. Today we are talking with Jackson Frank of Dime, of the Step Back at Fansided and Liberty Ballers. He does a great job covering the NBA, covering the NBA draft. That is probably where you've heard him before. He's come on our show several times to talk draft. But today he's on to preview the Western Conference with us, set up some tiers, rank the teams, see where the Suns fit, of course, in all of that. So we have an awesome conversation breaking down the teams ahead of the Suns, behind them, how the Suns could get up, what the playoff race figures to look like, and of course, if the Suns can avoid the play-in game and really cement themselves in the top echelon of the Western Conference. Before we get into my conversation with Jackson, which will go today, Monday, as well as into Tuesday, four-part conversation with Jackson. So two segments today, two segments tomorrow. I wanted to give you my quick thoughts on the Suns' final preseason game of the NBA calendar. And, you know, first of all, we did not see Chris Paul. He was a late scratch for the game. But what that meant is we got to see a healthy dose of Cam Johnson again, or of campaign again, excuse me. And that was awesome because I was very vocal about how the first preseason game for Payne was not what you wanted to see. Payne did not start in this game, but he played a lot better, in my opinion. And that's the first top-line takeaway. 9 points on 4 of 9 shooting, made one of his threes. 2 assists, only 1 turnover for Payne, 16 minutes. But overall, I thought his decision-making was better. I thought he kept the ball moving. I thought he took the threes when they were there, looked more comfortable and in rhythm when he did it. Overall, just didn't seem to be second-guessing himself the way he was in that first game. Didn't make as many mistakes as he did in that first game. But takeaway number two is this was the Devin Booker show. 27 points on just 12 shot attempts, 4 of 7 from deep. Many people have noted that if Booker can finally take that step forward as a three-point shooter, that's going to be awesome. And it certainly looked like he was up to the task in this final game, taking pull-up threes in transition, taking all sorts of different looks and making them pretty consistently. He finished the preseason, guys, as the number one overall scorer in the NBA with 86 points across those 4 games. So he is in prime condition to get this thing going. We also saw Jay Crowder play 24 minutes again, playing with the starters. 4 of 11 from the field, 3 of 7 from deep. Fairly, I mean, guys, I would think about this as a pretty routine stat line from Crowder. Obviously, you want him to shoot a little better overall than 4 of 11, but taking 7 or more threes a game, that's what you want to see from him. Mikhail took 7 as well. Booker took 7. Cam Johnson, who only took 0 actually in that first preseason game, he returned, took 6. So the Suns overall took 44 threes thanks to the presence of Crowder the aggressiveness of Booker, and of course that return of Cam Johnson. Langston Galloway got some run too, which brings us to my final takeaway from the game, which is that backup guard spot. I guess this is just my curse as somebody who covers this team to talk about the backup guard situation for the Phoenix Suns for eternity, but here we are. I'm happy to do it because it is pretty interesting this time around, and Galloway was the number one guard in terms of minutes off the bench in this game. And to me, that says that this guy has earned his spot in the rotation being higher than it was heading into the preseason. I think nobody has helped themselves in the preseason more than Langston Galloway on this Phoenix team. So 21 minutes for him, 4 of 10 from the field, 3 of 6 from 3. Got a random 3 offensive rebounds. I'm not looking into that too much, but or reading into that too much. But Galloway seems to be a guy that his shooting, his decision-making, his quick decision-making in the Suns' 0.5 offense seems to be really earning the trust of the coaching staff. And yes, he's, you know, a small 6'1", 6'2", maybe, you know, not an elite defender, not an elite athlete, but he's quick. He knows his role to a T. He makes good and smart and quick decisions and, you know, is a veteran that at least when you watch him is not getting just obliterated on, you know, on defense, falling into screens or losing his man over and over. Like, he's a bench player who for 18 to 22 minutes a night, I think you can survive with, especially considering he's most likely to be playing with Javon Carter, Cam Payne, Chris Paul, or Devin Booker, who are going to, again, insulate that a little bit, especially those first three defensively. So Galloway, to me, was not a guy I expected to see a lot, and he certainly earned his keep. Last thing is, on that note, Etuan Moore did not play, and Monty said that the first time he really thought to bring him in would have been the fourth quarter. Monty kind of said that as a positive in that, like, oh, don't read into it that he didn't get any minutes, but I actually see it as a pretty glaring negative for Moore that Monty didn't even see a spot in the rotation for him until the fourth quarter when he was sitting the starters. So that's worth pocketing. And also, Javon Carter getting the start. I noted Payne did not, but Carter did. Played 36 minutes on Friday night. And, you know, 6 assists was my big takeaway from him. 6 assists and 2 of 5 from 3. Don't expect him to be playing a role like that really much at all in the regular season, but it was better than it normally looks. I'll say that. So hopefully that continues for Carter, because continuing to improve his decision-making would be pretty nice as well, and being able to trust him a little bit more with the ball in his hands. So 36 minutes and a start for Carter to close the regular season, 21 for Galloway, 16 for Payne, and a DNP for Etuan Moore. I would just say, until we get any more evidence, that is the recipe we'll see come regular season time, at least for Wednesday's game, is Carter getting the most minutes, followed by Galloway, followed by Payne, and maybe more not in the rotation. All right, guys, that closes me out solo. A little bit of a taste of that preseason game. It was a few days ago, but I wanted to get you my thoughts. Next up is my conversation with Jackson Frank, but first, who is ready for some football? College football heads into bowl season, and there are some big matchups right around the corner. The NFL regular season is finishing up, with playoffs becoming clearer and also just around the corner. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust here at the Locked On Podcast Network, and that is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use that promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. You guys also need to get in on these NBA over-unders. The Suns are at a shocking 38.5. As you will hear when I talk to Jackson momentarily, that is kind of disgustingly low in my personal opinion. So hit the over on betonline.ag for the Suns. It's minus 160, so it's not the best deal I could possibly give you guys, but go poke around over there, get some football odds in there, and make some money. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit at betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. This episode is also brought to you by 1010. Now, you may have heard about this in the New York Times or Forbes, and we're so excited to tell you about it. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful commitment ring, launching exclusively on January 18th at BlueNile.com. And when they're gone, they're gone. We all know that the diamond engagement ring is iconic. It's a timeless expression of the deepest commitment between two people. And with 1010, it's been beautifully re-envisioned in the hands of 10 modern designers working exclusively with sustainably sourced diamonds. If you're making 2021 plans or looking for a unique and meaningful way to celebrate Valentine's Day next year, you're definitely going to want to check this out. Again, this exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings launches on January 18th, and you can preview it exclusively at BlueNile.com. There is no better way to start off the season than to rank teams. I guess that's what we do this time of year. And to come help us do that is Jackson Frank. He writes about the NBA at Dime Mag, at Fansided, at Liberty Ballers covering the Sixers, has been on our show a number of times. And I wanted somebody with a little bit more of a national perspective on things so that, again, we're not in an echo chamber here talking about the Suns and thinking of them as something that they are not. But Jackson, how are you handling all the basketball? I know you're obviously a big draft guy. That's what you've come on to talk more than anything on our show. Are you balancing NBA and college all kind of colliding right now? How's the basketball intake for you?
Yeah, I think I'm balancing it pretty well. You know, I haven't been too invested in preseason. You know, I've got some downtime. I'll catch a quarter or two here, and then, you know, if a certain player stands out, maybe I'll go watch their minutes on Synergy or something. But right now the balance is going okay because I'm still definitely prioritizing college. But when things really kick off in the NBA on Tuesday, it'll be probably a lot more challenging. I'll have to report back in terms of how I'm balancing all of it. But for now, it's been still fairly simple. Just, you know, if a rookie plays well or a young guy plays well in a preseason game, I'll go and see how that came about. But
sure,
for the most part, it's been pretty easy still, but I think it'll change once I really prioritize things.
Yeah, once you have like regular season of both and then tournament time and all the rest. But you're also dealing with a real winter and I'm not, so like I can still go outside. How's the Philadelphia actual East Coast winter treating you?
You know, I'm used to going to school in Spokane when I was at Gonzaga, but it's been cold. It snowed a lot, I think, on Wednesday or Tuesday of last week. It hasn't got anywhere warm enough for most of the snow to melt. So a lot of the back roads are still a little icy and snowy and when I haven't gone outside much, but when I have, it's definitely been a little harsh. Not that bad, but you know, definitely to the point of telling you that it's better to stay inside than be outside.
Well, living in Phoenix, it's one of those things I can never tell if I actually want it or if it's like after 1 week you're good. Like, I feel like I would have gotten my fatal snow one time. I'll go outside and experience. Okay. Yeah. It's white in the sky. And then I'll be pretty good forever, I feel like. But Arizona's nice because you have the north part where there actually is snow. And so you can go see it if you'd like to, but you don't have to live in it. All right. Well, let's talk Western Conference basketball here, because a lot of the people that I brought on the show have been actually more on board with my perspective that the Suns are going to be competing for a top four seed, a home court advantage in the first round playoff spot than I expected when the Chris Paul thing kind of first was reported. So I think we might get to Phoenix sooner than obviously we ever have before. I don't even think we've ever done a show where we rank the West on this program before, because it never mattered. But we're going to start at the top, and I think it's probably safe to assume that you and I are aligned with the rest of the people who care about the NBA and thinking that the Lakers are at the top. Is that where you are?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I feel pretty strongly about that being the case.
Do you think they'll be overall better than last year?
I think to an extent, yes. I think, I know obviously Rajon Rondo was the guy who seemed to always step it up in the playoffs, but I definitely think, at least in the regular season, having Dennis Schroeder, if he's willing to, you know, really embrace that secondary ball handling role, because he just gives them a level of kind of ball handling and perimeter creation they didn't really have outside of LeBron last year. Getting Montrezl Harrell, I think that'll be a really nice pick and roll duo. Definitely maybe a drop off defensively with no JaVale and Dwight and replacing them with Montrezl and extent. Obviously they have Marc Gasol too, but yeah, I think they'll probably be a little bit better, but I could definitely see kind of the depth improvements being offset by maybe a little bit of a decline from LeBron. You don't want to really bank on that at this point with him because he seems to defy anything, but you never know. Maybe he takes a slight step back and it's masked by a better roster around him. But I would say maybe a little better overall, but probably not by a substantial margin.
I just like the Schroeder Harrell combo off the bench, just in terms of the regular season. It's like a kind of like a cheat code for points when the starters aren't in the game or when there's a lineup that maybe has some suboptimal guys in there. Is just, we saw it with the Clippers for the past couple of years. It's like those guys over the, they're like the third pitcher in the MLB that's just going to be there for you and be able to keep you afloat in a game or not hurt you, maybe more accurately. I like how versatile the front court is. I like that they can mix and match guys a little bit more easily maybe than they could last year, where Dwight and JaVale were so similar and AD is defensively pretty similar to those guys too. I guess, maybe less so JaVale, but you have, now you can go Gasol AD, you can go Harrell AD, obviously LeBron and AD, and maybe the most important minutes of the season, you can have LeBron and Gasol and feel okay about that. And they've been having some nice pick and pop fun in the preseason. So I think that's a step forward for them. And I think the Wes Matthews thing is not as big of a concern to me as, I don't know if people are worried about losing Danny Green. It felt like that was kind of a shock, maybe because people didn't expect him to go. I don't know. I think Wes Matthews is perfectly fine for what they need him to do. It's not like Danny Green was a major part of their team last year anyway. And defensively, I think they're pretty interchangeable. But let's move to the next team. And I'm curious, do you have the Lakers in their own tier, or do you think another Western team is up there with them?
I would still put the Clippers in that tier, even if I think the Lakers are definitely better. I think it's close enough. Knowing exactly what, like how much to take away from the bubble is really tough for me, but the Clippers are really good last year. Even though they lost at 7 in the second round, like they're a really good team still. And so I think there's definitely a chance that like they could have the best record in the West. Whether or not that means they're actually the best team is another story, but I think they're good enough to like, if things break right for them, they can be the best team in that conference. I still go with the Lakers, but I'm not ruling it out by any means. So I would put them, those two LA teams, in the same tier.
Me too. And I think one of my, I don't know how much of a take it is, but I actually could see the Clippers finishing as the number one seed. And I guess that's what obviously would make them be in the same tier. I do think, we think of them as maybe kind of 1A and 1B for the champion or for the Western Conference finalist in the finals. But I also think in the regular season, it seems like the Clippers, like you said, maybe because of what happened in the bubble, are being discounted. And I think they have depth. They have multiple ways to create good shots. They have balance offensively and defensively. They can kind of play different ways with the addition of Ibaka and the fact that Zubats is still there. Like, I think they're a team that over the course of the regular season is going to be able to just stack up wins. I really like the Kennard addition. He was in the 57th percentile as a pick and roll guy in 18-19. The last time he was healthy, last year was a lost year for him a little bit. He's a guy though that like, I don't think we think of as good of an offensive player as he is. And he's 67% at the rim that season. He's over 40% from three over the course of his career. I know you're a big Kennard guy. Do you think he fits kind of the way that they play? And do you think he's actually a guy who, when it's all said and done, we'll think of as like, oh, wow, he really improved their team overall?
Yeah, I think the issue with Kennard really is the health overall. Like, he's just had some pretty significant knee injuries. I know the Suns were linked to him, I think, in the 2018-19 trade deadline.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was 2019-20. I don't know. Everything seems so recent, but
it was 2020. Yeah, it was the February of this year. Yeah,
Yeah, and that was, I mean, Kennard had a nice year last year when he was healthy. So I think the fact that the Pistons, a team that were rebuilding, were looking to move off of him is fairly concerning for his health. But I think if he can stay healthy, he definitely represents an upgrade over Landry Shamet. I know the Clippers wanted Shamet to be more of an on-ball guy. He showed some of that at Wichita State, but he wasn't really able to unlock that last year. And Kennard can do that in Spurs. You know, you mentioned the pick and roll stuff. He's really crafty. He's got a ton of like ball things he can do to get open at the rim. Obviously a very good shooter. I think he can definitely function as kind of a secondary on-ball guy and then also space the floor off the ball, you know, if Kawhi or Paul George are on the floor. So I think that pickup made a lot of sense. And I just like Ty Lue more as a coach than Doc Rivers, I think. I think he's more flexible. I think he's better building an offense around its stars or building around, you know, the team stars offensively. And so I really like that. And so I think that gives this team a higher playoff ceiling, which is obviously, you know, kind of what this discussion should revolve around with the Clippers. When you have two guys like Kawhi and Paul George. So, yeah, I think the pickups they had over the offseason were really good. And I just think Ty Lue gives this team more, you know, you don't have Montrezl Harrell anymore. You don't have to worry about his defensive concerns. Even if Ibaka is taking a step back on that end, by no means, I think he's going to be anywhere close to as poor as Harrell. And if you get more minutes to Zubac, that's definitely a plus for the front court rotation.
Yeah, to me, Zubac, I'm glad you mentioned, the defense was almost 4 points better with him on the floor last year. His rim defensive numbers are pretty good for a center. You know, that's kind of the only defensive field goal percentage that I really trust, but it paints him pretty well. And I think not being married to Harrell by way of his absence will help them. And I think, like you mentioned with Lue, just generally, Lue's a more adaptable coach. We've seen him make playoff adjustments during several postseason runs with Cleveland. It feels like that was maybe the number one knock on Doc, was that he didn't have kind of plans B through D in the playoffs. And so their roster, I think, is a little better suited for that. And I also think the coaching is going to be the same. So I actually, the more I dig in, I think I really like the Clippers, and I was just kind of disappointed because they didn't do anything flashy in the offseason. But I guess when you have Kawhi and Paul George and Patrick Beverley as a role player and some of the other, you know, roster pieces that they have, Marcus Morris, just despite the fact that he's overpaid, like, they just have a ton of talent and they're pretty deep and pretty modern in terms of how they can build lineups out. So I really like them. I think they're going to be jockeying for that number one seed. Let's hit tier two, see if we can find the Suns in here, and we will do that right after a quick break. Excited to tell you a little bit more about the title sponsor of today's show, which is Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. New and improved best tasting protein bar ever. 6 new flavors for you guys, but you've heard about those. Let me tell you about the 12 original flavors, which are also pretty delicious. My personal favorite being either the salted caramel or the peanut butter brownie. And yes, all of them are covered in 100% chocolate, making them soft and easy to chew. And that creamy, soft inside that makes it taste just like a candy bar. It's perfect for the health-conscious person, anyone trying to lose or maintain weight, and anyone on just about any kind of diet that you're on. If you're on keto even, it's low in sugar, only 5 grams of sugar in that peanut butter, 180 calories, and just 5 net carbs. So perfect, light, little snack, perfect amount of protein. Let's see, in that peanut butter, there was 19 grams of protein. So it's getting you the punch that you need to recover from a workout, get you through the day full, or maybe just a snack. Right now, you also get a free cooler with your purchase while supplies last. So go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. That's all one word, locked on, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout for 20%
off. Back here with Jackson Frank going over our Western Conference rankings tiers for the 2020-21 NBA season. Make sure you check out Locked On Bets if you have not. It's our newest show on the network, getting you ready every single morning for the best bets of the day across all sports. Literally, turn this thing on when you wake up, go over to BetOnline.ag, place a couple bets, and watch your bank account benefit. I swear by it. 15 to 20 minutes a day. It's exactly what you love about Locked On Podcasts, but I'm not making you any money when you listen to my show, most likely. but Locked On Bets will. All right, let's hit the second tier, my second tier at least. I'm assuming, Jackson, you do not have anybody else in the top tier, correct?
Yeah, no, just the LA teams in that top tier.
Okay, who is your number three team?
I'd still have Denver there. I know there's some worrying about losing Jeremy Grant, but I think the JaMychal Green pickup was awesome. Truth be told, I think Jeremy Grant's value to that team was definitely overrated. He wasn't very good in the regular season, even in the playoffs. His best trait was at least being able to play the three and the four and give Kawhi and Paul George some problems. But I don't think he's really a huge loss, especially when it's offset by JaMychal Green. Jamal Murray is going to be another year better. Jokic is still only 25 and he's a top 7 or 8 player who continues to elevate his game in the playoffs, or at least maintain his superstar status. So I think Denver's really good, even if they're not maybe quite ready to take that next leap yet after another year in the West, or after a year in the Western Conference Finals. Still should be a really good team with a chance to make the Western Conference Finals. But I think people may be worrying too much about the Jeremy Grant loss, and it's still a team that should be really, really good.
Yeah, you mentioned Kawhi and Paul George. That's obviously the series they won, but against the Lakers even, I think you saw Grant can't defend LeBron, and so who can, I guess, is a fair question. If you're not going to get one of those guys, then, like, to me, maybe the biggest loss of Grant is his shooting. And that's something you're going to be disappointed by. And obviously, yeah, the fact that he can capably play the three and the four, and he can defend most guys at those two spots who aren't all NBA MVP caliber players is useful. But, you're really at the end of the day talking about like a high level role player or, just like a starter level player. And considering they were so deep anyway, I think that's reasonably easy to, not easy, but not something you're going to lose sleep over. And the starting lineup, or the, what we presume will be the starting lineup, especially after Will Barton made some comments about not seeing himself as a sixth man, which would be him, the two young guards, Murray and Harris, Millsap and Jokic, was plus 8.6 per 100 possessions last year. That's pretty damn good. And they played a ton together. They obviously have years of continuity at this point, having kind of grown up together, that five. So they're going to be just fine with that starting group. They obviously also have Michael Porter Jr. still coming off the bench. Monte Morris, JaMychal Green, who you mentioned. I do worry about a little bit about the depth. Are there any young guys on that team that particularly excite you? You got PJ Dozier, Bol Bol, their two draft picks this year, Najee and RJ Hampton. Is there anyone you think from that group's ready for a step?
I think PJ Dozier is someone you could find in the back end of the rotation. Like, he can really defend. Every time I watched Denver last year before the bubble and he got minutes, I always felt like, I was impressed by him defense. And you saw some of that in the bubble too, I think. So I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised to see him emerge as a back end rotation player, and people not necessarily be shocked, but be a little surprised by it. But he's good. He's been good in the G League. He can really defend. That's what the Nuggets need. The Nuggets, you're never really going to worry about offense with them, especially Jamal Murray. He doesn't have to be the bubble player he was, but if he can be a 23, 24, point per game guy and 58-59% true shooting, you've really got something there, step forward for him overall. So I like him. I don't think Bol Bol will play a significant role, but I just think this team is really good. I think JaMychal Green even fits them better, because even if Jeremy Grant was really good as a shooter last year, I think there's been a stat, like almost all of his shots were like wide open. Like no one ever really didn't shoot or make a lot of contested threes. And for any time he did pass those up, he had a lot of times where he would dribble and try and shoot like a mid-range pull-up. I just think JaMychal offers about the same level of actual shooting without some of the troublesome decision-making. So, and he can play small ball center. He was a really good option for the Clippers last year there. I don't think Grant can quite do that. So, yeah, I think PJ Dozier is the guy that I'm looking forward to maybe seeing most among the guys you mentioned. But yeah, Denver should just be really good again, because they seem to develop wings well, and they've got a really, really good roster at the top with enough depth to back those guys up.
All right, who's your number four?
This is tough. It really is. So like, this whole tier is really big for me. I think I'm going Dallas for now. I don't want to reveal my fifth team, but I really struggle with that. But I'm just not going to bet against Luka. He took a huge step forward last year. He's still really young. Like, guys just get better each year, especially after the jump he had last year. I think he'll handle clutch situations better. I know they don't have Porzingis, but I like the addition of Josh Richardson. Obviously, he started last year in Philly, but I think he's just a better player than Seth Curry and fits well in Houston, or not Houston, Dallas, excuse me. He's going to get a ton of open threes from Luka. Dwight Powell is back. So just a lot of it is trusting in Carlisle and Luka. And I know Porzingis is out for, you know, the foreseeable future, but just not going to bet against the guy that I think is going to win MVP this year. So.
Sure, I do too. Yeah, I think Luka, the more I went through, especially in the West, because I feel like if it's not going to be Giannis in the East, I don't necessarily know of an East player that I could see winning it. Maybe Jason Tatum's a decent bet in terms of value, but not probably the most likely guy in the league to actually win it. So I look at the West, and Luka's my guy and when it comes to that, because you know, from a narrative perspective, like not having Porzingis, I think that's going to kind of be one of those things that we talk about in the media of like, oh, he's doing it without his second best player, et cetera. But it's nice that they're also getting Powell back. They're losing Porzingis for, you know, a month or more, but they're going to have Dwight Powell. They have Maxi Kleba there still. I think they can stay afloat. We saw in the playoffs when Porzingis was fouled out or hurt that they can at least be pretty good, you know, be competitive in tight playoff games, even without Porzingis. So with Luka, I'm curious, you know, just on the margins for him, like, can he be even better in isolation? He scored just over a point per possession. He was good, but not amazing. He almost never gets open threes. Now he's taking them off the bounce a lot, and those aren't likely to be open almost ever, but can they make life a little easier for him? Maybe there, maybe use Richardson's ball handling. I don't know. He's never really played in the starting lineup with another ball handler. I don't know if I think of Richardson that way, but getting him some of those would be easier. And then you look at his numbers, like he is never really a guy who's operated in the post. Maybe that's something we see from him. I'm just excited to see kind of how Doncic expands his game. I am a little worried. They have a lot of good, like interesting young players and guys who could theoretically fill a role for them. But outside of their top nine or so, it's a lot of question marks, like Wes Iwundu, Tyrell Terry, Willie Cauley-Stein, guys you don't really trust, Trey Burke. So, you know, if they do have injuries, if Porzingis misses time, if Dwight Powell has any complications coming back, it could get a little bit dicey. That was your number four. The Mavs are my number five. My number four was Utah. Where do you have Utah?
Utah, I think I would end up with, I want to say, I think six or seven.
Okay.
I'm not going to spoil who I'm deciding between because I don't want to ruin where I have Phoenix. But
these are all in the same tier for you, right?
Yeah, I've got two through eight. In the same tier. I still have Houston in that tier with Harden for now.
Okay, gotcha.
But obviously it seems pretty likely Harden is traded, at least, you know, something, maybe not quite before the season on Tuesday, but pretty early on, I think. But you know, for now they still got him. I like some of the pickups they made. But yeah, I would have Utah six, but it's all really close for me. You know, I think a lot of, you know, it seems cliche, but a lot of it's just going to come down to health. I think going into any season, you've got a lot of really tightly bunched teams in the middle of any conference or either conference. And it just ends up being, you know, which fourth man stayed healthy and, you know, allows a team to go 6-2 over a stretch rather than 3-5. So just stuff like that. But I think Utah would be really good. I like the addition of Favors. Their defense really missed Favors last year. You know, I think Boyan will be back. You know, Donovan Mitchell, he had some weird advanced metrics last year, but I think they really undersold him. I thought he was still a very good player. And obviously Gobert is Gobert, you know, for all of his warts, and maybe some of the people don't necessarily like his personality. He's still one of the best defenders in the NBA and someone who sets awesome screens and is one of the best play finishers too. So I have Utah six, but I could definitely see them being four, maybe even three if Denver maybe load manages a little bit or Jokic misses a couple of games or something like that. So sure. The Jazz should definitely be very good this year.
Yeah, I think Bogdanovich coming back is what kind of put them over the top for me. They just have like a pretty complete rotation of guys that I trust. We know their offensive system is going to work. It's just a matter of how good it can be. If, you know, looking at the numbers for Conley, he took an uncharacteristic amount of floaters. So maybe if he's healthier and he can get to the rim a little bit more rather than taking those tough, you know, non-paint or non-restricted area twos and stuff, you know, that's a potential for him to have a better season. Mitchell just getting older, Gobert doing his thing. I like the addition of Favors as well. I just think, I don't know. I kind of feel like this might be the best Utah team of the, you know, Quinn Snyder era. And that's gotta, I guess, amount to something. It is a tier with a lot of the other teams we've talked about, but I do really like this Utah team, especially if we can see them at full health come playoff time with Bogdanović in there and with an actual backup big man in Favors. And maybe if Conley can do what they thought he was going to do when they traded for him, then we could see a pretty competitive team, maybe one that's actually more frisky in the playoffs than they ever have been. But who is your number four? Let's end the suspense right here. Who do you have in that four spot?
Well, we already had Dallas. We're on five, aren't we?
Oh, yes, five.
I've got Phoenix at five.
Okay.
I just think they're a really good team. You know, I think, you know, Rubio was really important to them last year, and I don't want to go too overboard with the Suns and underrate him because Rubio was a huge key in them being nearly 500 last year. But Chris Paul is really, really good. Like, it's just, and that team was good last year. Like, they brought back a lot of the rotation pieces. You know, for all of Eaton's warts, he's still a very useful player and better than whatever else they had playing or whatever else they had him for 50 games last year, whatever they had in place of him, excuse me, for 50 games during suspension. Booker seems to just, you know, add a little something extra to his game every year. I think Mikhail's going to take a step forward offensively. I know a lot of Suns fans are hoping for that. So it seemed like Dario kind of found his role too, in the bubble, especially the small ball five. I don't know if he'll be able to be used like that. I know he's been injured a little bit, but I just like that team a lot. I think a duo of Chris Paul and Devin Booker is really, really awesome. And the way that, you know, I think I wrote about their fit right around when the trade happened. And I just like the way that, you know, Booker is good enough to play on the ball, but he can play on or off the ball as much as Phoenix wants because he's awesome off the ball too. And I think that's huge. The big thing I think will be seeing how willing Chris Paul is to be an effective off-ball player. He is someone who I think deferred a lot last year to Shea, but has been a little methodical in his ways. And, you know, he'll play off the ball, but when he does have it in his hand, he kind of does his thing. He likes to snake pick and rolls and do all that. If he can really embrace kind of Monty Williams' offense in terms of it requires a lot of screening, cutting, moving off the ball, I think the Suns could even definitely outplay this five seed. But even as kind of a median outcome, I really like the Suns this year.
I'm not worried about the backup point guard. That's, I think, getting the most buzz among Suns fans. And when people have watched them in the preseason, I'm sure that's jumped out. I think Booker will operate more as a backup point guard than we've ever seen him do. And they have just enough overall talent at the backup guard that I just feel pretty comfortable that they can figure something out. You were just talking about Monty's offense. I think that takes a load off in terms of you don't need you know, guy who's going to pound the air out of the ball. And, you know, like, you don't need a Lou Williams type of player. You don't even need a Monte Morris type of player. You just need somebody who can basically initiate a set. And I think they have enough where they can figure that out. I actually do think Dario can play. I think he can handle being the backup five kind of predominantly. I think they're going to play Jalen Smith, which will help just size, give them size. And not having Smith play the five too much, I think mitigates maybe the adjustment period he's going to be in for trying to keep up as a big man on defense. If he's kind of just like a weak side rim protector and has a more narrow set of responsibilities when he is on the floor. So I think they can shore that up. What I'm most worried about overall is just the defense period. I think it's putting a lot on DeAndre Ayton to ask this team to be, I don't know, where do you, when you think about them, kind of what range do you see them finishing in terms of defensive efficiency over the course of the year?
I think they have some pieces there. I think Chris Paul took a step back last year defensively to an extent, but he's still very good. I don't know if he's necessarily better than Rubio, but I would probably have them in maybe that 13 to 19 range, 13 to 17 range. I think the offense could be top five or top six, and that would definitely be good enough to kind of be in the middle of the playoff pack. I don't have a net rating, you know, guide in front of me or anything, but
sure.
Yeah, I think, you know, Ayton still has strides to make. Was a lot better last year, but as a Suns person knows, you know, he's got his lapses and times where he still just fails to make rotations or properly position himself. With him, it's all about, you know, staying mentally sharp, you know, really telling himself to, okay, you got to have your hands out to throw the pocket pass, or, you know, you got to rotate over here to, you know, get rid of the weak side, you know, option. So stuff like that. But I still like the personnel. Like if Mikhail plays more, Chris Paul, G Crowder is someone who maybe isn't some elite defender, but he can guard the three and the four. He's super strong, moves well for his size and strength combo there. So yeah, I think, you know, it is not a great defensive roster by any means, but there are enough pieces in place there to really make it work, especially in conjunction with the offense, which should find quite a lot of success, which will, you know, force him to slow it down a little bit and not let them get out in transition.
And that was one of the big things we saw in the preseason is when their offense was clicking, it obviously, you know, sounds simple to say, but it really did make a pretty stark impact on how their defense looked compared to when they were just missing shots or when they had bad lineups out there, when they had, you know, preseason level of talent on the floor. That I think is part of why maybe fans or people like me came away thinking the defense was a concern. It's just hard to really see the whole package when you don't even have one preseason game where the whole top eight or nine is healthy and playing in a real rotation. So, you know, it's some of the limitations of the preseason. I just think, like, you know, I'm all for adding Crowder because I think that's how you want to build a team to win right now. And you can't keep kind of holding Ayton's hand, but the teams that do play that sort of smaller, more team oriented defensive style, like I think we're going to see this one play, it, you know, they really need that rim protection element to make that work. Like, you know, the way that Crowder impacted the game defensively last year was, yeah, defending some of those bigger playmakers, but he's going to be awesome when he dips into the paint to check the roll man, or when he reaches in to kind of swarm the ball handler, or taking a charge, and, you know, just kind of his rotations and his strength are his big, and those aren't like, those aren't necessarily the top qualities you would need if you were just thinking, how do I supplement what DeAndre Ayton needs to be at his best? So it's going to take a big jump, I think, from Ayton for them to be a good defensive team. Although then you look and they were 17th last year. So that, you know, you wouldn't have said that they were very good defensively last year, and they were almost average, in, you know, in the pack of the league. So I would say they'll be better than last year. And, you know, if they can improve from that 111.4, that's Basketball Reference's number, and get to 14th, 15th, like you said, I think they'll be a pretty elite offense. That's plenty good enough to be a good playoff team, and that's where we have them. So I have them sixth. You had them fifth. Who is your sixth team? And that was the Jazz. Okay, so then my seventh team is Portland. Where do you have Portland?
I have Portland there as well. I mean, just, I mean, like I've been saying, this tier for me is really close for the most part. But Portland got better. Like, they made really good moves over the offseason. They're going to get Nurkic back for a full year. You saw how much he helped last from the bubble. At least offensively, I think defensively he struggled to an extent, but he was playing the most minutes he's ever played. He was averaging like 32 a game, and usually he's been around 26 to 28. And it was after a year and a half off. So I expect him, you know, with another 4 months to kind of you know, amp up his conditioning again and get his legs under him. He'll be, you know, kind of the level of defender we saw in 2018-19. Getting Robert Covington was a really nice piece too. I think he's just, it's kind of the guy or the type of player that Portland's long wanted and needed next to McCollum and Dame. So, you know, I don't think Cantor's a good player, but I definitely think he can have some value as a backup five. So, and he's, you know, he played well in Portland during his last, and I think, you know, there's something to be said for that kind of a comfort and familiarity. You know, you have a spot and you can play well there. So, yeah, I just think this is a really good team. They're going to get Rodney Hood back. Harry Giles is someone I know a lot of Kings fans were bummed to see go. So it's just, I think a lot of pieces on the margins that really help supplement their kind of their core trio of Nurkic, McCollum and Lillard that, should just help a lot, I think.
Definitely one of the deeper teams that they've had during the Dame era. And it's funny, the one guy you didn't mention of their offensive addition or their offseason additions is the one that I'm the most down on, which is Derek Jones. I just think he probably shouldn't be starting for them, and it seems like he's going to. I feel like Trent or even Hood should maybe start next to Covington in that forward spot. And I just don't I don't know if Jones is ready for the role that he's about to get, if he is going to be their starter. Maybe he's just sort of a nominal starter to give them some more athleticism and size in that starting unit. But I just don't think, you know, he shot 25% on corner threes last year. He doesn't defensive rebound at all. Like, if he plays a major role on their team, I think we'll all just be kind of watching them all year thinking, you know, it's they have kind of the wrong mix. Now, is that reason to be so down on them? Obviously not. I think with Damon CJ, we know there's a floor there with Nurkic probably added in as a three, top three at this point. He's kind of earned that. And then obviously the Zach Collins factor, like, is this the year that he finally puts together a healthy season where he's impactful night to night, gets the fouling under control, maybe, you know, spaces the floor a little better than he has, things like that. Am I overreacting to the Derrick Jones thing? Should we just look at this as like a top 10 that's pretty solid and it kind of doesn't matter who starts?
No, I'm fairly similar on Derrick Jones. I think it was a fine signing. I think probably an overpay, but like, he's all right, but he wasn't in Miami's rotation. I know, obviously, you know, Miami is a team that made the finals last year, and Portland's a team that's trying to just make it out of the first round, you know, with the roster they have. But yeah, he's fine. He's a really good cutter. I think he will have some utility in Terry Stotts' offense that likes to, you know, have its off-ball guys move around a lot. Even likes to have CJ and Dan do a lot of moving. So, yeah, I think he's whatever, but I definitely would start Rodney Hood or Gary Trent for sure. I don't like the idea of two non-floor spacers in the starting lineup with Nurkic and Derrick Jones. Obviously, Nurkic started to take some threes last year in the bubble, but he's still a guy teams are going to sag off of. So, it's whatever. I think, you know, early on, you know, I think as long as they're not married to him being a starter, they should be all right. But, it wasn't some like huge signing that I was like, oh, great, fine by the Blazers. It was kind of like, probably an overpay guy could have some use in the back end of rotation.
Had a lot
but,
of money. Yeah.
The fact of starting him definitely seems like a bit of a, you know, misevaluation of who he is as a player and how good he is as a player, but, should still be a good team. I don't think by any means you were overestimating how, you know, how good or bad they should be, because we have in the exact same spot in the West.
Yep. Okay. So you said you had the eighth team in this same tier, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's save that for tomorrow's show. We will be back talking, Jackson's number eighth team, my number eight team, who is part of my next tier, and, 4 and 5. I think you guys all know who the fifth tier will be. It is a solo tier for me, rounding out the bottom of the West. But we'll get into some interesting conversation on who the Suns might face in a play-in game if they get there, who might be knocking on the door to kind of challenge them from behind. We will see you guys on Tuesday.